In a moment, we'll read in Eicha. Al eila ani bochia. For these I cry. Al eila. For these reasons, for these calamities, for these losses, for these people, for these lost moments and lost opportunities, for these shattered dreams, for these broken hopes, for these dissolved relationships, al eila. For so many things, ani, I, bochia, I cry. And every year, when we sit down to read, to hear these words, I'm moved by the commentary of the Ibn Ezra I shared with you before, who the Ibn Ezra tells us that the ani, in this sentence, who is the I? I am crying, I am broken, I'm brokenhearted, it's Yirmiyahu Anavi. It's the great prophet Yirmiyahu, the author of Eicha, who personally experienced the destruction and who laments with tears all that he witnessed, all that he observed, all that he experienced, all that he lost. And he simply can cry, Aleila ani bochia. But what about us? We weren't there. We never saw the Beis HaMikdash. We never had the schus, we never had the privilege to look up from the Kotel, to see a magnificent edifice, to see a brilliant building, to see a place and a capital of miracles, of justice, a central place that gathered Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people. We've never been there. We've never seen it in all its glory. We don't know what it means for it to be destroyed or broken. So says the Ibn Ezra, Al Eila Ani Bochia, the Ani, the I who's crying in the Eicha we're about to read is not only Yirmiyahu, but it's Ani, it's me, and it's you, and it's every one of us. In every generation, until that building is rebuilt, and until the world makes sense, and until the pain stops, in every generation in which we continue to experience loss, tragedy, calamity, pain, that which is inexplicable and incomprehensible, that which is unbearable. Ani, you and me, all of us, we felt the pain. We've cried the tears. We've seen and we've experienced the hate. Because my friends, tonight, tomorrow, they're not about the building. The building was bricks and mortar. Building is a building. It's about what the building represented, what it symbolized, what it contained. It's about the building being a place of Hashras Hashkina, where Hashem's presence was intensely felt, where we can go when we had doubt, uncertainty, where we can go for clarity and confidence and calmness. It's about a world in which we have a target on our chest, a world in which we can be ridiculed and targeted, threatened, because we don't have that divine protection. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. It wasn't about the building. It's about what it meant. And yet again, here we are, on the floor, knocked down by another difficult year. Every Tisha B'Av, we think, since last Tisha B'Av, how could it be worse than the year before? How could the Aleila Ani Bochia, how could the list of things and people and experiences and calamities to cry for be even more devastating? How could the losses be more overwhelming? Last year, you recall, we weren't gathered in a room pressed for space. Last year we read Eicha over Zoom, yet distanced from one another. We read the words of Eicha Yashva Vadad from Bidud. We read about a city that was isolated and lonely from our own place of isolation and loneliness. Over the last year and a half, we've lost so many people, so many casualties, so many who suffered an illness, and even those who weren't affected by a diagnosis suffered from being apart and alone, suffered from anxiety and fear and worry, suffered from being distanced. Al eila ani bochia. On this last year and a half, you and me, we cry. Who could have or would have dreamt that a year later, just when we felt we turned a corner, cases begin to spike again and bunks in local camps are closing yet again, just when we desperately want this pandemic, this global nightmare to be in our rearview mirror and behind us, just when we want to totally come out of this, here it is. Here it is yet again. Is there a greater sign of galus than so desperately wanting to visit Israel and being unable to do so? So desperately needing to touch those stones, to walk those streets, to see, to feel, to hug those people, that energy of Eretz Yisrael, a place that when we attach ourselves to it, we are changed. We read this morning, Nahar Gadol, Nahar Pras, Rashi says, why is the Nahar Pras called the Nahar Gadol? Why is it called a great river? Because the way it flows, its dimensions, its water volume, its velocity, what makes it Gadol, what makes it great, says Rashi? Because it's Samach La'Eretz Yisrael, because whatever attaches itself to Israel, whoever and whatever is connected to Eretz Yisrael is Gadol, is great. We so badly, who've not yet been able to be back, and who used to have the privilege of going on a regular basis, we are not the same. Our lives, our year is not the same. Our davening is not the same. Is there a greater reflection of the galus we're in than the fact that we continue to have sovereignty over a thriving homeland, and yet it's so difficult to go back? Al Eila Ani Bochia. For that alone, we cry. Since last Tisha B'Av, Meron, a place that was synonymous with joy and mysticism and miracles, is now forever etched in our minds and our memories as a place of horrific tragedy, of a place of terrible loss. This morning's parsha tells us with the incident of the spies, Vatikrevu Nelai Kulchem, Moshe says, you all approached me, and Rashi quotes the Sifri, Birbuvia. It was an enormous crowd. Yiladim dochfimis azkenim uzkenim dochafimis arashim. There was pushing, there was shoving. And in Meron, a huge crowd, a bottleneck, a tragedy. 45 precious souls who went to climb a mountain of ruchnius, of spirituality, who never came down. And never went home. 45 souls, each a world unto themselves, each a unique story, each a distinct and singular contribution to this world, each al eila anibochia, each a reason to cry. Among them, 13 children, 2 pairs of brothers. Among the victims, Tani Morris, Olav Shalom. His grandparents are in this very room right now, beloved members of our community, whose whole family we know well. Al-Eila Anibochia. A young man, the prime of his life in his gap year, who had already found himself, who was building himself, who loved learning Torah, what a joy for life and a selfless devotion to his friends, to his Rebbeim, to his yeshiva, previously to his community, who was such a bright star with a bright future. There's no question was going to change the world in which he lived. And that bright light was extinguished so inexplicably and so suddenly. That precious smile from that last picture snapped in Meron in that moment of great joy. Al Eila Ani Bochia. One of the young people of our community learning in the same yeshiva, Shalvim, said for weeks and months after his loss, couldn't concentrate in his learning. He'd look over in the Beis Medrash and all he saw was that empty makom. All he saw was that empty seat where Dani used to sit. And why wasn't he there? Why didn't he come back? Why wasn't he finishing the year and coming back for a second and maybe more? 45 in the Shamas, 45 victims of Meron. 45 is Ma. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shom Eimach. What Hashem do you want from us? What is the message? What are you trying to get across or communicate? How are you trying to wake us up? Al Eila Ani Bochia. For this is a reason to cry. Just 16 days later, after the Kol and Stolner Rebbe, one of the most outspoken advocates of safety and security, of wearing a mask and distancing, of taking the threat of the pandemic seriously, on Erev Shavuos, inaugurating a new Beis Medrash, a collapse of the bleachers, killing three, 39-year-old, a 23-year-old, a boy who had just celebrated his bar mitzvah a few weeks earlier. That all of us have seen that image of the bleachers falling and collapsing. It's not about the wood and the metal and the bleachers. It's not about the building. It's not about the Beis HaMikdash. It's about the neshamas. The Ribbono Shel Olam withdrew his neshama, his shechina. Now, Leila Abni Bochia, this last year, he has taken so many precious neshamas. Just a month later, the tragedy close and near to us in South Florida, in an image captured on video that we will never be able to erase. It's hard to believe is even real. The condo, the tower in Surfside collapsed. And to give you perspective on the depth of this tragedy, context. The building fell on the 14th of Tammuz. The building collapsed before the 3 weeks even began. And as we sit here on the ground on Tisha B'Av, all of the people who had been in it had not yet been recovered or identified. Al Eila Nibochia. Among the 97 victims was Chaim Rosenberg, Alav HaShalom, a first cousin of one of our beloved members, Zev Raiden. And Zev told me that his cousin Chaim was known not as Chaim, but as Chaim Shel Shalom. He was such a pursuer of peace, such a positive person, such an advocate who advanced harmony in his family, his community, and with everyone he met. A loyal and generous friend, someone all could rely on. And why was Chaim in his apartment? Why was he in the tower that fateful night? Because he had just come down with his daughter and son-in-law, who also perished in the tragedy. He had just come down to get away because of the kind of year he had had. You see, earlier that year, after 3 years of battling a brain tumor, his wife had passed away. For 3 years, he wheeled her everywhere. He quit his full-time job to care for her. He pushed her in a wheelchair down the aisle at his fourth child's wedding just 3 months before she passed away. And only a short time after he got up from sitting Shiva for his wife, both of his parents left this world because of COVID, 10 days apart from one another. Chaim Rosenberg sat Shiva 3 times in 1 year for his mother, his father, and his wife. And at every Shiva, he never let anyone stay. He never let anyone cry. He made them leave after a few minutes. He didn't want anyone to feel that sadness or that pain. He wanted them to be happy. And so he sent them home. Chaim loved learning. You may have seen pictures of Sfarim that were found in the rubble of the tower in Surfside. Those were his Sfarim, his Aruch Lener, his favorite commentary on the Gemara. He had a tremendous emunah he never questioned. He had amazing faith, and he told his children, no matter what Hashem throws our way, always be besimcha. Al eila ani bochia. For Chaim, and for his children, for the other victims, and for their families, how could one not shed a tear? How do you not feel the pain? How do you not recognize this extraordinary churban in our world? How many more Shiva emails does our shul have to send out? How many more people have to experience loss? How many more of our members do we have to never see again? Aleila Nibochia, among them, our precious, our dear, our beloved Chaim Diamond, another Chaim, who left us less than 30 days ago. It's not yet his shloshim, 48 years old, had made such a difference in our community and in the world, and one can only imagine the difference he had yet to make. Such a big heart and a loving spirit, and a model of an authentic and real relationship with Hashem. Such a desire and ambition to make our community and the world a better place. The difference that he made. Halela ani bochia. Halela ani bochia. The rockets yet were raining down on our brothers and sisters in Israel. Unfortunately, that's not a new story. But that our brothers and sisters in New York and LA and other parts of the country can't walk on the street with a yarmulke without the risk of being beaten up, attacked. That in 2021, Tavshin Pei Aleph, last week there was a rally in Washington, D.C. against anti-Semitism. Who would have thought in today's modern world, with its modern ideas, the Jewish people would still be fighting for our right to exist? Halela ani bochia. The Jewish condition in the world is a reason to cry. And so yet again, there are so many tears and so much heartache and so much pain, but now what? What do we do with it? For these 24 hours, at least until Chatzos tomorrow, we simply recognize it. We wallow in it. We lean into it. We feel it. We don't go on with our lives as if everything's okay or everything's normal, but we're moved. Removed by the people and the experience and the extraordinary events that are sending us messages, that are trying to wake us up, that are igniting us. And that we cannot be callous or indifferent or go on business as usual. How could we be the same after the year and a half that we've had? How could nothing in our life be measured as different? Not our personality, not our attitude, not our kindness, not our patience, not our generosity, not our charity, not our Torah learning, not our davening, not our observance. How could nothing be different? Halela ani bochia. To be the same after living through such an extraordinary time, to be unchanged, to be unfazed, to be exactly the same, that's a reason to cry. That in itself is a reason to cry. I was recently listening to a podcast that made what I think is a fantastic suggestion. The speaker said, take a piece of paper and a pen and plot four quadrants. And on one axis, write love and hate. And the other, write before the pandemic and after the pandemic. And fill in those four boxes. What did you love before the pandemic? And what did you think you hated before the pandemic? And what did you learn from this year and a half that you should love? And what did you learn that was worthy of hate? Plot it out. Write it down. Measure it. Hopefully it will reflect that we've learned to love every moment of life, that it's precious, it's a gift that cannot be taken for granted. Hopefully we learn to love our family and the time together and their gifts. We've learned to love the precious memories. We've learned to love the ability to congregate as a community, to come together, to be united, to be there, to care for one another. We've learned to love shul. We've learned to love davening, the parts we couldn't hear. We've learned to love to breathe freely without our face covered, to gather unreservedly without rules. Hopefully we've learned to hate taking things for granted, and to hate being distanced or apart from one another. And to hate sweating the small stuff that don't really matter. And that we often cry, Bechiya Shachinam, for no reason over. We should learn to hate the return of talking to shul. And to hate machlokas and pirud. To hate conflict and fighting and division and judgment of one another. Chazal tell us the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam. We all know it was baseless hatred. It was a baseless hatred between people. It's been a trying year in those relationships in which we see people who are reacting or behaving to the pandemic, to the precautions or to the vaccines differently than we are in every direction. And for some of us, it's tempting for that to consume the totality of the relationship, to only see that part of who they are or how they're behaving or what they've done, of who they voted for or the difference we have on policies or politics. And for that little difference, which I admit is not insignificant, but doesn't have to become the totality of how we see them or who our relationship is. But to see what we have in common and the other 99% of who they are, to attach ourselves and to love them, to feel them, and to connect with them. There was a Rebbe in Shayashev, Rebbe Moshe Green, who's no longer there, a Rebbe in the yeshiva, lived in New York City, and he once drove through a pothole, got a flat tire, called AAA, and a Latino man in his mid-60s pulled up behind him, got out, and said hello. And then he began to speak to him, to this clearly observant Jew in Yiddish. So the Rebbe Green said, "Are you Jewish?" The man said, "No." He said, "How do you know Yiddish?" He said, "You know, I was a retired NYPD police officer, and I was hired by the Satmar Hasidim to protect the Satmar Rebbe, Rabbi Yo Teitelbaum. And so I dressed like a Satmar Chassid to blend in. And listening, I overlapped. I heard the Yiddish, and I gained a lot." And the Rebbe laughed. This Rebbe laughed. And he had a lot of questions about his experience in that community. But then this retired policeman, this AA, this AAA person, said to him, "Let me ask you a question." He said, "I heard the expression Yiddish a cup. That a Yiddish a cup means that Jews have a sharp mind, an astute way of thinking, the perceptive." So the Rabbi Green said, "Yeah, Yiddish a cup, it's an expression we have." So the man looked at him and he said, "So let me ask you a question. I understand that you've been exiled for 2,000 years, you've been the target of persecution, systematic attempts to exterminate, and that all you long is to go home, back to Israel, back to Yerushalayim, and to have your temple rebuilt. So how is it that if you have such a Yiddish cup, how could it be that you guys are so smart that in 2,000 years you haven't figured out how to get along so you can go home?" A simple observation, but a painful question. That in 2,000 years we haven't figured out how to just get along. So someone voted differently, but their approach to vaccines are different. We don't have to have an opinion about everyone and everything. Observant kid was drafted to the majors. It's the greatest thing, it's the worst thing, it's the best thing, it's not the best thing. A reality show, formally observant, the best. Why do we have to have an opinion about everything in the world? If we could learn to get along, we could go home. But I want to suggest to you this evening as we begin Eicha, that maybe Chazal were reminding us about Sinas Chinam, not only about hatred of one another, but about that quadrant of hate in our graph. Because what we hated before the pandemic was probably, likely, mostly chinam. How many things did we have an intolerance for, or did we perseverate over? How many things did we get bent out of shape about that only now we can see just don't matter? They're just not that important. They're just not worth hating. They're chinam. In the big scheme of things, they're nothing. There's so much to be grateful for that we take for granted. And we sit here on the floor, al eila ani bochia, because as much as Hashem, as much as this world is causing us to look up and to take note and to see the tragedies that should remind us of how often we have gifts and blessings, and we don't. We just read this morning in the Haftorah, Chazon Yeshayahu, Yadosh Shor Koneu V'chamor Evuz Ba'alav, an ox knows its owner, and a donkey knows the master who's given it a shelter, but Yisrael lo yada. Ami lo hisbonan. The Jewish people don't take note. My nation, says God, lo hisbonan. They're mindless and they're thoughtless. And all they care about is themselves and their happiness and their pleasure. And as Ali Shor of Volba points out, the cause of the Khurban, Ami lo hisbonan, was a lack of hisboninus, a thoughtlessness, a mindlessness, a carelessness, a failure to simply note or pay attention to the gifts and to the blessings and to the good things that even an animal notices and thanks its master for. And so yes, we're crying for corona, but it should make us even more appreciative for our good health. We're crying for Meron, but it should make us even more appreciative every time there's a gathering that doesn't end in people being crushed. We continue to cry for Stolen, but we're grateful for every event where the bleachers or the stands don't collapse. We continue to cry for Surfside. But it should only make us even more aware of what a miracle it is when any tall building stands safely and securely. So yes, each of these tragedies were extraordinary, but so were the first responders, and so were the Hatzalah volunteers, and so were the community members who stepped up and the efforts to rescue and to recover and to treat and to save lives. My friends, as we read Eicha, the way to turn the tears into triumph is not only to cry, but to show that we care. To be nice to one another so we can go home. To bring redemption by taking responsibility. To have a little hisbonenness, to contemplate and to be mindful and to think what's worth hating and what's worth loving. What do we take for granted and what should we say thank you for? And maybe that's what the Gemara in Tainus, what Chazal mean, Kol Mis'abel al Yerushalayim, Zoche V'ro'a B'vinyana. When you're Mis'abel on Yerushalayim, when you cry for that which is worth crying about, then you're Zoche V'ro'a, immediately you begin to feel grateful for that which you have, and that is how we will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. It's not up to anyone around us. It's not up to our neighbor. You can't point a finger and say, I know someone that really needs to hear this. A few months ago, there was a person painfully upset at me. They targeted me. They very publicly shared a picture of me and wrote, Ephraim Goldberg is the reason that Mashiach is not here. So, okay, it was a kapara. It's fine, it didn't bother me. But my eight-year-old son came home from school one day. And he said, Abba, is it true that you're the reason Mashiach's not here? So I said, Shai, where did you hear that? Why would you think that? So he said to me, one of the boys in my class told me that he saw. So I thought for a moment. No one or nothing prepares you what you're supposed to answer. And I turned to my son. Abba, is it true you are the reason Mashiach's not here? And I said, yes. It's 100% true. It's my fault. Because there's so much more I could do and so much better I could become. And if every one of us, even if we don't love the messenger or the messaging, but we accept the message, that if each of us would take the personal responsibility to hate a little less and to love a little more, to transform our crying into caring for one another, to simply learn to get along, then we can finally go home.